And thank you to the City Council for hosting this exceptionally important COVID community update workshop. Thank you also to the esteemed state and local healthcare providers, the school superintendent, and the tribal leaders who are joining us today. Thank you as well to the fish processors who have started talking with the city about COVID and the coming fishing season. Thank you most of all to our esteemed citizens, guests, and participants who are with us today. The agenda has a number of speakers, some from the state of Alaska, the Department of Health and Social Services. Because of the schedule changes that the mayor referred to, they are not available until 7 o'clock. So they will join us then merely to be available to answer questions. And that is Dr. Jill McLaughlin, the state epidemiologist and the chief of the Alaska section of epidemiology, Dr. Liz Olson from the Division of Public Health, Tessa Walker-Linderman, a nurse consultant in the Office of Substance and Addiction Prevention, and Brian Fisher, who is the chief of operations of the Alaska Emergency Operations Center. So they will join us at 7. They will just be resources to answer questions. They will not be making presentations. We also have Dr. Richard Asher, the clinical director of BBAHC, and Bernina Vinua, the incident commander, and Gina Carpenter, the state public health nurse here in Dillingham. Each speaker will have 5 minutes to make their presentation, and then we'll go on to the next speaker, because we want to make sure there's plenty of time for the members of the community to ask questions and to raise comments. With that, Dr. Asher and Bernina, would you like to go ahead and get started with your 5-minute presentation?
This is Dr. Rich Asher. I just have been talking to infectious disease physician at Alaska Native Medical Center. We had a clinical director's meeting 2 weeks ago, and they said that they only had 4 patients in the hospital at Alaska Native Medical Center with COVID. And I called today and spoke, and they have not had a patient admitted for the last week. They have no one in the hospital with COVID. If I understood right, they've not admitted anyone. So there's been an amazing change that's taken place recently, and that's encouraging. Feel that the big part of that is the vaccine push that the team has been doing here and in Anchorage. We also learned that Western Alaska, the villages have allowed people who've been vaccinated to come back without quarantining, if that's correct. So we find that encouraging, because one of the greatest concerns we have is that a lot of patients who I have tried to refer to Anchorage won't go because of not wanting to quarantine when they come back, and also fear of the catching the virus. So getting the immunization appears to be helping a lot. And so we're finding that good. We're also discussing strategies to get the school going, to keep it going. And we're hoping to be able to do more testing so that if a child becomes ill, we can identify them and they can go home, and the rest of the kids can continue school and watch for signs and symptoms of getting the virus infection. So that's the primary thing that we're doing. We're seeing we are not, so when they call us red, we're not seeing people in our own community coming through the hospital ill very often. So people do get the virus, but they're not getting terribly sick, is what we've noted. And that we think that the immunization is what's making the big change coming about. And people using mitigating strategies of keeping some distance. If they're sick, staying home and wearing masks, possibly offer some protection. So that's the main strategies we're trying to use at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Yeah, go ahead, yeah. Please.
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Bernita, did you want to add anything now?
I think just a quick note is that just an update of when the cases came to fruition, BBHC did provide a mass testing in the Dillingham High School gym, as was indicated on the Smart Start plan. We also provided a lot of tests on campus here at the hospital prior to that. And so between those two areas, we probably tested about 400 people within that weekend, or within probably 3 days of the initial news of the spike in cases a few weeks ago. And this is something that BBHC has done throughout the region when there are known cases or possible spikes. And so that's something that we are able to, and so we appreciate that everyone in the region has really been good about the mitigation and preventing the spread of COVID, and in their wearing the mask. And I think it shows in the amount of cases that we have. And I'm truly grateful for the people in the region.
There's,
go ahead.
I have had several patients decline to go to Anchorage when referred, or even come here and be evaluated further. And I believe outcomes have been affected in a great, in a way that their outcome has not been good as it could have been. And I think it's trying to decrease the amount of quarantine that people have to go through is important, because I'm having people with heart disease, cancer, that have declined to go and be seen. The other thing with people being kind of shut down and not able to go, I'm seeing a lot of violence, and I'm seeing some suicides, and I believe that I'm seeing more than I have in the past. And so those are other reasons we want to get people less locked up, so to speak. And with the vaccination, I think they are less likely to get the infection. Lastly, getting children back in school, we're just seeing from hearing from parents that this is very challenging for their children, and that some parents are worried that the child won't be able to advance in school. And the many children apparently are not able to learn kind of vid-YO, and also the system doesn't always work. So we hear from families throughout the Bay, actually, when I travel. So these are things that we hope that using the mitigating strategies of school, keeping the schools open, and I know that's a desire of all of us. That's something the med staff and the hospital staff wish to encourage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor, and thank you to you and Bernina for staying within the 5 minute time limit for speakers. The next speaker is Gina Carpenter. Now, Gina, you had asked me to put a document up on the screen. Would you like me to do that now?
Sure, that would be great. Thanks.
Okay, and then it's 2 pages, so you can tell me when you want me to scroll it.
Yeah, and just for folks that are on the radio, this is Gina Carpenter with Dillingham Public Health Center. And so I've provided the city to show on this Zoom presentation the quarantine plan that we can look at using now when we've been exposed. This is a potential for travel as well, if we do feel that travel is the risk. And I can talk a little bit about that with the contact tracing that we've been doing through public health. And as everyone's probably aware, quarantine is staying home when you've been exposed or potentially exposed to protect you from spreading the virus when you're in an asymptomatic state or before you start having symptoms but you have become infectious. There have been changes now to that because 14 days is just too long for so many folks. The shortest one, there's three options, the 14-day being the safest. There's a 10-day option, and there's also a 7-day option. The 7-day option, which people might be interested in, is that you could get out of your house and get at least back into, say, the classroom as long as you're protecting yourself with the mask and social distancing by taking a test. And so you take a test at least after day 6, and you have to remain in quarantine till you get that result back, because anytime you take a test, if it's positive, then we would go back and say, well, who have you had contact with in this time between your test and the result when you found out, because you wouldn't have known that you needed to quarantine. So this plan, I will talk to the city and see if they would post it on their website. In fact, they may have done that already. But it just is an option when we are looking, when the city's going to have to look at making the decision about whether they're going to extend their emergency order or not. I can say that with information that BBHC provided me on their vaccination numbers, I reviewed that with the numbers that we have done through the Public Health Center. And when we go to the Division of Community and Regional Affairs to see what our current population is, as of 2019, it indicates that for Dillingham City proper, we have about 1,559 people that are between the age of 20 and over, up to and over age 85. If we look at that group, the number of people in Dillingham who have received two doses is at 46.5%. So this is a hallmark of just an amazing amount of work being provided through our tribal health organization, the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, with support from the state. I think the state allocation planning folks that are making the decisions about how much vaccine comes to our area has been extremely helpful. And that people are stepping up to do what they can to protect themselves from being the person that spreads it to somebody else. So this is really exciting news that I did want to share. And Greg, if you want to just roll this page that I have about quarantine to the second page, it's just a nice little thing where an individual who's needing to quarantine can make their plan, and they can count it out on a calendar and then figure out either what, you know, what option they're going to take and when are they going to test and when might they be able to be back in the community with social distance and masking. So we're just, you know, continuing to work to grow out of this pandemic. But one thing I'll remind folks is that in the year 1918 and 1919, everybody was pretty tired of quarantine by spring of 1919 in the second phase, second year of the pandemic. And then, of course, we saw huge impact in our close region from that. So I just want to make sure that when we look at relaxing, that we do it with a lot of information and that people understand well what they need to do. And I think my 5 minutes might be up. So thank you very much for your participation today. I really appreciate everyone being here. And I'm always happy to answer questions later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gina. And thank you for staying within the 5 minutes, too. We appreciate it. The next speaker is Dr. Johnson, the Dillingham City School District Superintendent. Dr. Johnson.
I would just like to really start by just a lot of thank yous and appreciation. Kerr-Young was tremendous in their support to ensure that we had internet service for all our students during the first part of the year, and that paid massive dividends. And then the City of Dillingham and the Alaska Community Foundation have been incredible in their generous gifts fiscally that have enabled us to operate safely and to provide all these opportunities for students in this unique environment. And I'd definitely be remiss not to talk about our classified, certified administrative team. No one signed up to work in this environment, and by and large, they've done so quickly with great diligence and just a passion to help kids despite the continual changes they've been facing. So I think that's just incredible. And really our students and families, I think, have done a marvelous job of adapting to an educational environment that they weren't prepared for. And in a lot of cases, it's not what's best for kids, and we recognize that. And that's why we're excited with some of the things I'll talk about shortly. And then lastly, BBHC and Public Health, I think they've been able to be contacted on the weekends, at night, in the mornings, 7 days a week. And it's been tremendous in helping us adapt and be responsive to the changes. And then as Bernina kind of mentioned earlier, the mass testing was a really incredible insight into how the district's operating and what we can do in the future. What we realized, there was really only one positive test that came out of that was linked to the school, which shows that what we're doing is effective. It shows that with these strategies, we can have the building open far more frequently and have students in the building despite different outcomes in the community. So it's a tremendous, tremendous win, I think, for our kids. So currently where we're at is on Monday evening with the school board, we looked at a new targeted closure plan. So you wouldn't see an extended closure any longer unless there was a significant outbreak in the community or in the school. So this would give us the flexibility to maybe only close one classroom or one building for a day or two, and then all non-close contacts would be right back in school. So it would really help us get away from that distance learning environment that we know is not working for a lot of our students. And it's something we're incredibly excited about. And I think the mitigation that the teachers have been willing to do and really help our kids do is what's enabled this to happen. And it's why I'm so happy about the future and where we're going. And then speaking of the future, just to the community, we're in fantastic shape. We just completed probably the most historic collective bargaining with our classified team to give them very substantial raises and honor the work they've been doing for this district. And we're really proud of that. And we're really proud of where we've been able to work with our certified team to honor their work and their commitment to Dillingham and our kids. And things that you should expect to see is we look to build a really robust summer school program. It would look a little different in years past. More access, more transportation, food services and things of that nature to really give our students a chance to catch up. And then we're really looking at expanding after-school opportunities next year, naturally athletically, but really academically, to really give our students those supports after school that we know they've missed. And a lot of it is honestly just socialization, too. And we know for our youngest students, just being around friends and being able to communicate and have that contact is so valuable to their development. So we're hoping through a lot of these programs we can help our students catch up and help gain some of that lost time that we've all experienced. So thank you for the opportunity tonight, and I appreciate everyone that's called in, and kind of really look forward to the weeks ahead.
Thank you very much, Dr. Johnson. Thank you also for staying within the time limit for speakers. The next speaker is the first chief of the Chugyong tribe, Thomas Tilden. Go ahead with your remarks, first chief. Is the first chief on? Okay, I'm going to assume that he did not make it. Courtney, are you on? Okay, then we'll go on. The next speaker is Robert Hayano. Robert, are you on?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Robert Hayano with Etcock Village Council. And thanks for the opportunity here. We believe a robust prevention program is the path forward to protecting our community and moving us towards normalcy. We don't need to invent the playbook here to accomplish this goal, as we did before the 2020 fishing season. We were kind of floundering around and trying to figure out what needed to be done yet. There are numerous examples of what works and what doesn't work. And we actually have a real good example here at the completion of the 2020 fishing season, where, as far as we know, there wasn't one positive test within the community as a result of the fishing season. Moving forward, we would like to see the city maintain the travel permit program, but with enforcement personnel actually checking the aircrafts, maintain the 10-day quarantine period, but also require testing at the beginning and a negative test at the end of quarantine. We understand that there are currently two rapid testing machines in Dillingham not being used due to funding issues. So I think if we could focus on funding, maybe we can get those things in play. There also needs to be an enforcement component to these restrictions. Without enforcement, it leaves a large hole in any restriction program. There needs to be a quicker method of getting the information out to the public. We believe that this will slow down the rumor mill. And, you know, there's about 50, little over half the population, I believe, in Dillingham consists of Alaska Natives, and in the Dillingham census area, a little over 70%. And it's a known fact that Alaska Natives contact the disease at a higher rate than just about any other population in Alaska, and also the death rates. We strongly believe that when the city looks at their program restrictions, that needs to be a consideration for extra caution. With that, just for the information, Ecock Village Council has set aside a portion of their CARES funding to be used assisting the city of Dillingham in COVID-19 prevention. And lastly, we'd like to thank the Public Health Service at Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation for the outstanding job of getting the vaccine distributed to the Bristol Bay residents. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Council President, and thank you also for staying in within the time limit. Okay, I'm the next speaker. Go ahead. Did you have something else?
Greg, this is Alice, and I think Tommy is on. I don't know if he knows how to unmute his phone, and so I was going to try and do that. If he doesn't, let me see if I can.
Thank you.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, there he is. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Tommy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry about that. I was, I don't know why I was pushing pound instead of star six, but for the record, my name is Thomas Tilden. I'm the first chief for Trujillo. And I want to thank you all for taking this time out and allowing us to provide input. I do want to, first of all, recognize the school superintendent for what a great job they did, as well as the Public Health Service, Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, and our tribe involved in the last incident that happened. I think that, everything that took place went very well. I think everybody did their job, and we had a great outcome. And I'm really glad that we're going to have those professionals answering questions that we might have regarding this virus and the recent outbreak. When Governor Dunleavy said that he was moving Alaska past restrictions a few days ago, and that really worried me some. He is, unfortunately, he did end up getting COVID-19 after that, so maybe he has changed his mind. But I think that what happened when they, when the legislature has not used his authority to extend the declaration regarding COVID-19 yet, that is something that we really need to focus on as a community. What under Title 29 of the declaration can the city do? And whatever the city can do, I would hope that they would implement what they can. I know that there are some things that the declaration did that, you know, like allowing immunity for testing as well as for vaccinations, that kind of goes away. However, maybe our legislature will work on that. I think that when I look into the future, I want to say that I'm very lenient, but at the same time, yesterday in the news, the P.1 variant showed up in Anchorage, the Brazil variant. And that's very concerning to me, because in reading what happened in Manaus, Brazil, they went through a COVID-19 outbreak, and then they thought they lived through it. They were all prepared for the second wave, and then the Brazilian variant showed up, and all of a sudden, within 24 hours, they were out. They were overwhelmed. All of their health systems, all of their EMS responders, and the Brazilian variant hit very, very hard, to where at its peak was hitting 4,000 people a day. So that was very, very disturbing to read about that in the Anchorage paper, and finding out that it might have been around community spread going on since January. And so that's very concerning. I hope that we're able to really take a look at that and make our plans. As far as the future goes in recommendations to the city, I think, you know, we have a pretty good plan in place. From last summer, maybe we have to redo some of the things. This COVID only goes around one way, and it travels. Either travels by plane or travels from person to person, but it travels. And so we really have to look at how it travels and find ways to make sure that nothing happens to us like what happened in Brazil. And I think that with the 2021 fishing season about ready to come here, that we do really need a good, solid plan. And as Robert has pointed out, that the majority of Suriname residents are Alaska Native, and it's very disturbing when you read that the infection rates of Alaska Natives is 3.5 times higher than other rates for other people. And then in taking the lives of those that are infected, it is 1.8 times higher to take Alaska Native people. And that's very disturbing. And when you look at the overall deaths in the state of Alaska, and you see that we only make up 60% of the population of the state, but 36% of the deaths that happened in Alaska were Alaska Native. And those stats are very disturbing, and something that we need to look at and in making our decision. So thank you very much for allowing us to have our say, and I look forward to working with the city and other organizations in the future on what do we do next. Thank you.
Thank you very much, First Chief. I'm so glad we were able to get the connection established so that you could speak with us tonight. The next person on the agenda is myself, speaking as the interim city manager. After that, we will open this meeting for discussion or questions from the public. And then just to overview the agenda, after that, there will be a time for council comments, and then mayor comments, and then adjournment. But we want to make sure there's plenty of time for the public to make comments. I will briefly speak about two things tonight. The role each of you in the community and the role of the police department in enforcing COVID quarantine rules, and the outbreak of Dillingham COVID positive cases publicly reported on February 3rd and 5th and continuing at an elevated rate in Dillingham right now. Now, it's going to be interesting because the perspective that I will bring and the information I will bring may be a little different from what some of the other speakers were saying. And that is the purpose of the meeting tonight, is to put lots of different perspectives and points of view in the mix, open it up for questions to, drill down and flesh it out, and then go from there. First, let me talk about the police department COVID-19 investigation. Since COVID emerged onto our radar screens in March 2020, the police department has responded to 268 COVID-19 calls. Of those calls, 40 of them are for reported quarantine violations. This generated 40 quarantine investigations. These investigations seek the facts about a possible violation. The investigations go where the facts take them. Based on the facts they learn, the police make conclusions about whether a violation occurred. They issue a citation if it's warranted. So how does a COVID investigation work at the police department? Healthcare providers and the school are legally prohibited from disclosing identities of possible violators. The city generally cannot investigate without citizen reports of possible investigation. Calls of possible quarantine violations come into the dispatcher, who immediately opens an incident card. An officer then quickly conducts an investigation, including interviewing witnesses, and the officer returns to the department and files a report. I got a screen of the calls that have come into the... So here's a chart of the total results of the 40 investigations conducted since March of 2020. There were eight. So this is the frequency since March of 2020. Here's the totals. There were eight citations issued out of those 40 investigations. 15 were concluded to be unfounded, where the department concludes that there was no violation. There were 10 that were unprovable in that the investigation did not result in probable cause to ethically issue a citation to an individual. And there were 7 cases that involved education, in which the individual was educated concerning the emergency order. Most recently, there have been 3 quarantine-related calls and investigations since January 1. That's down here in the right-hand corner of the chart. 1 in January and 2 in February. February was the time period of the outbreak. 2 of those 3 calls were determined to be unfounded, and 1 was dealt with through education. Now, what about investigations related to recent COVID outbreak, the recent COVID outbreak? The department has concluded 1 investigation and is continuing to investigate others. On February 11th, the department received a report of a parent isolating in Dillingham with COVID. The department's factual investigation found the following facts. In late January, the Dillingham resident parent went to a neighboring community to help a relative by bringing them to Dillingham and back, not knowing that the relative recently returned from Anchorage. Shortly after that, in early February, the parent took one of their children to the hospital with an infection, and they were COVID tested. The parent learned for the first time in early February that the parent was positive and the child tested negative. So the rest of the family was tested. The parent's spouse and 2 children were positive, and 2 other children were negative. The relative arriving from Anchorage also tested positive. The positive tested people entered quarantine. The 3 negative tested children were sent to a relative's house in Dillingham. After learning of the positive test, the parent quickly notified the school. The school had already shut down based on notification by the hospital. A neighbor of the relative hosting the three negative tested children called in a report that the hosting relatives were COVID positive and not quarantining. The police interviewed the hosting relative, who said no one in the home was COVID positive. The department's factual investigation concluded that there were no violations of any city emergency order. Why? The parent who brought the relative to Dillingham did not violate any order because they did not know that the relative who traveled from Anchorage was COVID positive. And in fact, at the time, the traveler did not know this either. The relative did not violate any, the traveling relative did not violate any order because they traveled to, from Anchorage to a neighboring community that has no quarantine order. The parent of the two positive tested children quarantined them from school and sent the three negative tested children to the home of a relative. This did not violate any order, as no order requires those children to quarantine in their relative's home. Finally, those three children in the relative's home did not go to school because it was closed. Second, I'd like to talk to you about the COVID-19 in the city of Dillingham from March 2020 to date, including the recent COVID outbreak. The prior speakers have briefly addressed the COVID-19 outbreak in Dillingham between February 3rd and February 22nd, which was 3 days ago. There were a total of 30 cases in 19 days. I'll briefly summarize them in a chart and put it up now. There's the chart. My remarks now are based on data for the last 60 days at the city's Emergency Operations Center. The data for that comes from the Department of Health and Social Services and data from BBAHC. This data is a recent snapshot in time of some critical information relevant to addressing COVID in Dillingham at the present moment. This discussion does not address the admirable vaccination program that other speakers have referred to, and it is now underway in our community. As you can see in the chart, in the 60 days between December 22nd and February 22nd, a few days ago, in Dillingham, we've seen a disturbing spike in publicly reported COVID positive cases. For the 41 days from December 22nd to February 2nd, we never had more than one positive case per day, down here in the left and middle part of the chart. And that happened, one case per day only happened four times, December 25th and 29th, and January 9th and 20th. For the 12 days between January 21st and February 2nd, right here, we had zero cases. In sum, for the 41 days between December 22nd and February 3rd, we had a total of four cases, never more than one per day. Extraordinarily, starting 3 weeks ago, our cases multiplied dramatically. Seven cases on February 3rd, six cases on February 5th, four cases on February 19th, two cases per day on each of February 10th, 13 and 16, four cases on February 19th, and three cases on February 2nd. This is a total of 26 cases in the last, in almost the last 19 days, in a 19-day period ending a few days ago. That means that 86% of the cases over the last 60 days occurred in the last 3 weeks. It's a 750% increase over the prior 41 days, which saw only 44 cases. Quick action by the school and BBAHC in early February appears to have inhibited any wider spread of cases than this. So in conclusion, The city is deeply committed to protecting the health and safety of Dillingham residents. However, the city cannot guarantee everyone's health and safety, but will work as hard as possible to do this under our circumstances. Because health providers and the schools are legally prohibited from disclosing the identity of COVID-positive patients, the city is totally dependent on you, our esteemed community members, citizens, and visitors to report possible violations to the police department. The department will quickly and thoroughly investigate every single report that we receive and go where the facts take them. They will cite violators when warranted, but we cannot do this alone. We need everybody's help. If you see something, say something. Are we all tired of COVID and being handcuffed by COVID constrictions? Yes, we are. This is painfully and inescapably true. But it is also true that COVID is an invisible, silent, potentially fatal infection. It can kill you and me. The stakes are incredibly high. Our COVID safety doesn't just fall out of the sky and happen on its own. The safety of all of us depends on each of us doing our part. Among other things, taking care of each other means following the city's emergency order 1.1 and state and federal rules and guidelines such as masks, social distancing, and washing hands. In terms of reporting possible violations of quarantine to the police department, as well as observing city orders and COVID safe practices, it is up to each of us to stop this growth in COVID cases and to take care of each other. The data in this chart on the screen right now are not just numbers. This is our own flesh and blood. Who does not have a grandmother or a grandfather and other elders, a wife or husband, daughters or sons, sisters or brothers, friends or workmates that you want to protect from COVID? Imagine how safe we will all be if we all do this. Thank you. That's the end of my presentation. We'll now move into the section of the agenda that is open to people to ask questions. The mayor and the council solicited questions from people a few days ago, and so I have that list. I think I'll start by letting people ask questions, and then we'll come back to the list in a few minutes.